This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's once again time for our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Questions can come to us via radio program at AOL.com. Just email your questions, make them succinct and of general interest, and know if you have a very complex medical condition, we can't diagnose and treat you on the air. So try and limit the scope of your questions to a specific issue. Nutritional issue or health issue. How are you doing today, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman, how are you? I'm chuckling because It's so funny. We could get like 3 pages of email from a person listing all their labs and their history, and hey, that's a consult.
Well, you know, it is appealing, the notion that you can, for free, write to a doctor who you listen to, who you have a relationship with, and that they'll specifically address your complex medical problem, which has not been properly dealt with by 14 previous medical specialists. I mean, I guess it's a compliment that we sound so plausible and so authoritative in terms of our ability to unravel challenging issues. So thank you for the confidence you've vested in us. However, some of those questions may be left on the cutting room floor. If we find that they're too detailed. So this week, before we get into questions, some nice reactions to my article, 24 Ways We Should Fundamentally Transform Our Healthcare System. I wrote that, and it went out with our newsletter, and it was posted. And a lot of positive reactions, such as this one. I'm reading from, this one's from Joan, who happens to be an RN. Dear Dr. Hoffman, such wonderful reforms for a great healthcare program. I wish we could send your advice and knowledge to the president for serious consideration.
Well, it can be sent. You could go to whitehouse.gov, and you could send an email. You could copy and paste that. I mean, sure.
I did an April 1st broadcast on the radio show. It happened. My Saturday radio program happened to fall on April 1st. So I punked my audience. I said, you know, I told them about this, and I said, and then I got a call from Steve Bannon, you know, who is, vets a lot of policy for President Trump. And he said, you know, this is great stuff, Ron. Why don't you come down to Mar-a-Lago for the weekend, and you can do golf. You know, you can golf with President Trump, and we'll discuss it, and we'll put that together in a platform that we can advance as healthcare reform in the 21st century. And then I said, April Fools, because and the problem being is, Trump is an iconoclast, and he's breaking a lot of rules, and I guess that's sort of the appeal, that this is a guy who isn't going according to the traditional blueprint for diplomacy and being politically correct, and maybe, just maybe, he'll be that wedge that is going to smash through some of the conventions that keep us gridlocked in Washington. There are so many vested interests that I go against in these 24 suggestions, the pharmaceutical industry, the pesticide industry, the big food industry, the government itself, government bureaucracies that sustain subsidies for bad quality foods, making it really cheap and easy to buy sugar and high fructose corn syrup, and, the insurance industry.
Pornography.
Yeah, pornography, right? And the insurance industry. And, you know, the mm-hmm. government, you know, bureaucracies that sustain our medical care system, while, you know, doctors often get shafted, but the bureaucrats are getting, you know, multi-million dollars to administer healthcare plans, and, you know, and on it goes. So it's idealistic. I think a lot of people, you know, judging from the response, I think from both sides of the political spectrum, there wasn't necessarily a right-wing or left-wing proposal. There's some libertarian elements in this, which I guess you could mm-hmm. assign to the right-wing, but there are also some, you know, sort of lefty, environmentally friendly initiatives that you could assign to the, you know, the Bernie Sanders folks. And,
right.
You know, and then, and the basic premise being that healthcare should be affordable for all. I mean, it should, I think I start with a premise that nobody should die for want of medical care because they're poor mm-hmm. and disadvantaged or don't have a job. And nobody should go into medical bankruptcy because of a medical issue, you know, and just become in a state of devastating poverty because they had the bad luck. I mean, you could say, look, moral yeah. hazard, you know, okay, some people, they don't take care of themselves, they eat crap, you know, they smoke, and they don't exercise, and then they get sick, and so they expect, okay, you know, government come in to take care of me. Okay, yes, there should be, you know, some personal responsibility, but on the other hand, you know, some disease in this country is, it's not about a merit system. You know, you can, get cancer or have heart disease in spite of your best mm-hmm. efforts, you know, and bad stuff happens sometimes, so...
Yeah.
So to put, you know, that personal responsibility is, it only goes so far. But anyway, so if you're interested, go to drhoffman.com, and it's that is listed there. And this is maybe, you know, hopefully this is at least going to be shaping some of the thought about how mm-hmm. we can go forward and improve our healthcare system.
I hope so, too. Too many people have gone bankrupt. I mean, aside from the subprime mortgages and people who got in over their heads and the financial yep. crisis and all of that, this is probably the second biggest thing that's bankrupting so many right. Americans is their health care bill.
Part of it is who pays. Who pays for this elaborate health care that we're going to get? But part of it, you know, yeah. what I said is that both the Obamacare and, you know, call it Trump-Ryan care or call it the AHCA are mm-hmm. rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. We're headed for calamitous problems because we can't fund yeah. our health care. It's so expensive and so inefficient, and we mm-hmm. don't place enough emphasis on self-care, preventive care, natural solutions that are less costly. And, you know, we overdiagnose and overtreat. And then, you know, doctors right. also have to pay enormous amounts for malpractice, and so they're testing people willy-nilly just to make sure they don't get sued, and they're over-treating because, okay, you know, you got an ear infection, we'll give you antibiotics anyway because, God forbid, you go deaf and your parents are going to sue me, you know, so I'm going to yeah. over-treat you unnecessarily. That whole system has to be rethought because it encourages mm-hmm. Over-testing, over-treatment, and ultimately it terrifies a lot of good doctors who, you know, can make mistakes, but a mistake by a doctor shouldn't
so.
Lead to a physician
it is
suicide.
Understandably you know, so, sure. It's, you know, sure.
Demoralization, wow. physician suicide are on the rise. It's
wow.
That's you know, if you have burnout, depressed, suicidal doctors, you're not going to have a good healthcare system.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh no.
So anyway.
Wow.
Okay.
Well,
enough said on that subject. So let's go to questions.
Okay. We actually have a typed on a good old-fashioned typewriter letter.
Wow.
From John. John is an 88-year-old man. He's 5'10 and 150 pounds mm-hmm. and in reasonably good health. He's mm-hmm. not internet savvy at all. Hence, this letter, which is about the state of my hair.
Mm-hmm.
My hair is still mostly dark brown with some gray and very little fallout. Are you aware, Dr. Hoffman, of any nutrients out there that could stimulate the follicles on top of my head so that instead of growing hair so thin that it almost amounts to a comb over, these follicles could produce a crop of hair that is measurably thicker?
This is really an old school guy and, you know, extremely with it and proficient and, you know, although he's using sort of 1960s technology, you know, this is an example of, you know, the the best and the brightest of that generation. God bless him. And, you know, he's obviously a listener to the show. And, you know, congratulations for crossing that digital divide, which sometimes makes older people less able to access this kind of information. So, great. I think what he's falling prey to is this Miracle-Gro notion of hair growth. Is that, and, you know, Miracle-Gro is a great product for plants. And, of course, it doesn't always work. There's some plants that grow
right.
when you put Miracle-Gro on them. And but as often as not, there could be a plant disease. There could be not enough light, too much water. The plant could be old, revitalized, whatever, you know. And that's why Miracle-Gro works some of the time and remains popular, sells millions and millions of units per year because some people rave about it and some people it just doesn't work. And similarly for hair, inadequate nutrition can hamper hair. So optimal nutrition will help hair. But there are many reasons why people have loss of hair, and too many to get into.
He's 88, Dr. Hoffman. Yeah, he's 88.
And that's, we're cognizant of that fact. And yes, there's, you know, your hair is going to be a little less robust, you know, unless you're Sophia Loren. You know, she seems to have an amazing, you know, head of hair. But she started out with an amazing head of hair.
Is she 88?
I'm not sure, but she's up there. She's up there. I mean, if she was, if she was like, you know, really sexy when I was a pubescent boy, she's got to be pretty old. You know, she was in movies in the 50s. So anyway, there are actually, I think, a lot of hyped up formulas out there that are hair growth formulas, and you can take them orally, or you can take them, you know, apply them to the scalp or massage into the scalp, and I think most of them don't really work. One of the formulas that's reputed to help darken hair, but maybe not make hair grow, and it's a traditional Chinese formula called Hoshu Wu. It's used actually a lot in China as a tonic for older people, not so much to make hair grow, but a consequence of its use is that hair may be thicker and darker as a result. What's the scientific basis for that? I don't know. Is there a hormonal basis for this? Well, it's kind of, in reverse, is that when your testosterone is lower, you might have more hair. When testosterone is high, you know, these guys who are bald, really young, many of them have a lot of body hair, but conversely, they have a receding hairline or they're bald. So, and men who have low testosterone may have a very robust head of hair. We see this a lot in alcoholics. The alcohol may cause higher levels of estrogen, lower levels of testosterone, and they resemble in more ways women in terms of their hair loss pattern. But they also may have women's features like gynecomastia because of the hormones. So, you know, we can
which
go
is
on
the
on
development
about.
of male breasts
yes.
for our listeners who don't know what. Yeah,
right.
So. I would often joke, you know, look for the men with the thickest heads of hair, go to the local watering hole and see who the regulars are, and you will likely notice. You will likely notice thicker heads of hair amongst those men.
By that token, I'm a big boozer. You know, I have a thick head of hair, and but I, you know, I think I have it these days. I have a drink maybe once every couple of weeks. So anyway. Bottom line.
Other than Rogaine.
It's a medicine. It's a medicine. You know, Rogaine is a medicine that was discovered serendipitously because it was a blood pressure medication, but it had a terrible side effect. It caused body hair to develop. And then it was found that.
Is that how?
And so then they said, well, what if we just apply it to the scalp instead of taking it as an oral pill? And it seems that when you apply it to the scalp, it has an advantage. It does make some hair grow. So that can be done. But, you know, it's unlikely that you're going to get that much hair filling in. Now, just, I mean, I've done entire programs on this subject. One of the best people on this subject is Spencer Cobren, K-O-B-R-E-N. And he's actually a very, very enlightened layperson who did go bald, but he's become kind of a consumer reports person about hair loss products and hair loss, hair replacement techniques. So if you go to his website, which is called thebaldtruth.com, it's a great website because he's very fact-based. He's unbiased. He can't be bought. So he's not promoting one product or another. And he critically evaluates many products. And mostly concludes that they're worthless. There is some talk about, you know, techniques like, you know, the hair plugs, transplantation. I think the new think on hair is that they are developing techniques for stem cell regeneration of hair. But, you know, just taking some stem cells from your belly fat and injecting them into your scalp is an unreliable way of promoting hair growth. And might even be dangerous.
Yeah, I remember you talked extensively about we don't know how that those stem cells will differentiate.
Right, right.
And that's a problem.
That's fair. Yeah, so the bottom line, be happy, be content, do the best you can, use a comb over, gently color your hair, so that if it's, you know, if you want to make create a more youthful look. But don't go over the top because, you know, at 88, you deserve some respect. And you can let it go gray, right? Gray or white. I'm kind of looking forward to my hair going white because it kind of, it's nice, creates a nice color palette, you know, when you're wearing certain suits.
I'll trade places with you.
Yeah. Okay.
You're talking to a woman who's been gray since her mid-20s.
You want to go the other direction.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, you want to go the other direction.
Yeah. I followed my mother on that one. Okay. Yeah.
So,
all right, John, thank you for this letter.
Yep.
And we hope you catch this podcast.
Yeah.
All right.
I was going to get my old Olivetti out and I was going to bang out a response to you, but I decided to just, I was
Olivetti,
lazy.
Oh my God.
Yeah, you know,
I think I had a Corona typewriter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those and are... I remember my father's Remington typewriter. Yeah. Okay.
I took typing over a summer once in junior high school because I just resisted learning that. Finally said, I got up at the bull. I got to learn how to type. That was like the worst summer I ever had, you know. And then after that, I never utilized it. But then when the computer revolution started, I had to learn how to type, you know. I used to get.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great to be able to. I can type. I was a former executive secretary, so it's great to be able to type without looking.
Yeah.
Just type. So yeah, great skill.
Yeah.
We have an email from Jean. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, today I binge listened to some of your recent podcasts.
That's good.
And the way we binge watch certain shows on Netflix and Amazon Prime and who knows what.
House of Cards. You know,
House of Cards, right.
Actually, what we should do is we should do like all our shows, like, you know, and release like 30 shows at a time. Like,
there you go.
But
we dribble them out.
Yeah.
Anyway, she says, and your discussions of folic acid, both in the Q&A with me and with the methylation lady, reminded me of something I read about high folic acid and B12 levels in mothers and the link to autism. Could the rise in kids diagnosed with autism be related to adding folic acid to flour and taking prenatal vitamins that have folic acid?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a complex relationship because methylation is both something that helps, but it can hurt. So hypermethylation may be as bad as hypomethylation. And so we need a sort of middle ground. Now, typically we'll see
people need Goldilocks.
Yeah. So,
right.
The Goldilocks zone between hypo and hyper. So typically we'll see people with high homocysteine and we'll lower their homocysteine very effectively with high doses of folate, B6, and B12. And that's helping with methylation that helps to metabolize homocysteine so that the levels are lower. But then the question is, are we turning on certain bad genes? Or another instance is fortification with foods, where we know that the initiative to fortify foods like flour in cereals with folic acid has resulted in a decline in neural tube defects. I mean, this is basically the March of Dimes, and the most effective thing in the March of Dimes is not some cure, but a preventive that, you know, you can undertake to, so there's less birth defects, you know, cleft palates and neural tube defects, spina bifida and so on. However, some questions have been raised. You know, what are the adverse effects of hypermethylation? We know there are adverse effects of hypomethylation. And there are some studies that point to some potential downsides of hypermethylation. You know, at this point, you know, I side with supplementing folate, but there's also some question whether, you know, some people say, well, it's the folic acid is the bad thing because that's the synthetic folate. Folate is good because it's natural. Well, maybe massive amounts of folate, not necessarily good. So, you know, it's kind of a...
It's interesting. Even as an undergrad, you know, I remember being told by my professors that even though folic acid is synthetic, it's more bioavailable, which may be part of the problem. In the glitch with anybody with MTHFR that it's backing up. So maybe those women, those pregnant women who are found with very high folic acid levels or B12 levels, maybe that glitch may have something to do with and autism.
And I know it's hard for our listeners to hear this because it kind of goes counter to the notion of taking megavitamins, but sometimes megavitamins may... backfire may have a you know, negative ramifications.
So it's a really interesting discussion. I mean, it was extraordinary how the rate of birth defects, the spina bifida and all that, went down with fortification of B vitamins into grain products and everything. So much so that, wow, if this happened, more can only be better. But all this fortification and then being told by the dietary guidelines of Americans for you to eat all these grain products, that we're getting ever more and more and more folic acid. We're not getting folate from the fortification. It's folic acid, which can be problematic. Mother Nature, which gives us folate via our foods and our produce primarily and citrus and things like liver, is likely better tolerated, but you'd have to eat bushels of this to get so much folate as to be a problem,
I would imagine. Here's the latest study. I just dialed it up while you were talking. And it's we don't know what the study means, but it's sort of along these lines. Excessive consumption of some food supplements may have undesirable effects on subsequent generations. Now, this is a mouse experiment done in Germany. Scientists have shown that if male rodents are fed a diet rich in folic acid, methionine, and vitamin B12, their progeny do not perform well in memory tests. Wow. You know, so we think, well, you know, so it's like we got to make sure that dad is really tanked up on vital nutrients because we want the sperm to be very functional and we want to make sure that there's no methylation problems that affect DNA and so on, so on, so on, so on. Well, the father's lifestyle affects the cognitive skills of his offspring, at least in mice. If male rodents are fed a diet rich in folic acid, methionine, and B12, their progeny do not perform well in memory tests. Okay, well, one possible cause for this phenomena is diet-induced DNA methylation changes, i.e. alterations in tiny chemical tags attached to the DNA that can control the activity of genes. So, you know, I guess this could be an argument for people who are naysayers about vitamins, but I think the advantages outweigh the disadvantages in general.
Yes, unless we want to go back to the days of birth defects of neural tube.
It's a nasty trade-off.
Defects in particular. So,
or
yeah,
you know, or
absolutely.
Higher risk of dementia that's associated with marginal B12 and folate levels that cause a rise in homocysteine or that cause cognitive impairment. So, you know, I think we've highlighted one of the controversies in nutrition that we should keep an eye on. There are even some studies that keep going back and forth, like does folic acid supplementation that's now mandated by law, is it increasing the risk of cancer? Well, some studies are saying, oh, yeah, it might, because hypermethylation can cause cancer to grow. It's like feeding the cancer. On the other hand, there are some big studies that say, no, there's no higher risk. And I keep looking at the studies, and the controversy continues. And even when they do editorials in major nutrition journals, sometimes they say, well, you know, we got to watch this, but we're not sure yet, you know?
Yeah. Right. At the end of the day, so often we have more questions than we do answers. Mm-hmm. But that's the nature of nutritional science.
I think that this will go down in the annals of, did Trump and the Russians collude to rig the the 2016 election? You know, it's gonna go on and on and on, and it may never be resolved. Okay.
Right.
Although some, I think they're, and it's a good example because some people have already made up their minds one way or the other.
Yes.
Okay. So we're going to pause. And when we return to part two, what issues are we going to tackle?
I'm taking niacel to prevent glaucoma, which runs in my family. But how much niacinamide should I take too? Can I take them together?
Okay. One of our listeners has a question. We'll answer that in just a moment. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. And we'll be back with more of this week's edition of Q&A with Layla on Intelligent Medicine.